All right, I think it's recording now. Do you guys see that it's recording on the top left? Yeah, cool.
Yes.
All right, Susanna.
Okay, hello and welcome to this Atheist Republic discussion. Today we are talking to Celine Oskowin and Onur Romano, who are the founders of the Association for of Atheism Turkey. How do you guys say that in Turkish?
Ateist Derneği. Wait, Ona is a native Turkish speaker, so he should pronounce it.
Ateism, Danny.
Thank you.
Wait,
I knew I wasn't
so
going to
how
be
do
able
you
to do
know?
that myself.
How do you know if you're not a native Turkish speaker? How do
No, she
you?
speaks. Her Turkish is real good. It's just that,
What's the difference?
she has an accent, just like our English accent. When I speak English, you know that, I'm a Middle Eastern. But when
Right.
she speaks English, she speaks with a British accent, and I'm so
No.
jealous of that.
No, just my mom grew up in England and stuff, so I don't speak like a typical Israeli. But like the way I speak Turkish is like the second I say hello in Turkish, they go like, "Oh yeah, where are you from?" and stuff. So it doesn't sound really good.
Wait, so
Awesome.
where are you from?
I grew up in Israel.
Right. So
Yeah.
you speak Hebrew, English, and Turkish?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, like a B1 level of Spanish because my family is a.
Wow.
No, but it's because my family is actually originally from Spain. But let's not get into too many details because that's only the
Okay.
beginning, like the outline,
Okay,
and
okay, okay, okay.
it
That's
goes
okay.
on now on to like one third of the entire world map. So yeah,
Okay.
that's what
All
we're
right.
talking. Yeah.
Okay,
Cool.
sounds
Well, thank you for joining us for our audience. Onur and Celine are here to share their stories about what inspired their atheist activism and what led them to create a very special new project called the Atheist Refugee Assistance Program, or ARAP for short. So, yeah, let's just get started with how you became involved in this activism and what inspired you.
So I believe it was, it was 6, 7 years ago when I first met Celine. During our first try of establishing an atheist organization in Turkey, it was called a Congress of Atheists. It was an underground organization having atheists from all political backgrounds. And a year after we started publishing Atheist Magazine, which was the first hard copy atheist magazine of the Middle East, and then we started the Association of Atheism in 2014. And Celine and I have been volunteering for the same cause since then, and even before then. So we go back to, I think, 2012, 2013, something like that. And then, once after we established the Association of Turkey, I mean, the Association of Atheism Turkey, it was actually a different experience for both of us, I think. What do you think, Selin? It was, having. Having the chance to work with hundreds of atheist activists in Turkey and sharing the same ideas. It was, I think it still is a very unique experience. And I feel honored to be part of that job. And in 2016, I had to flee Turkey. To seek refuge to Canada as an atheist asylum seeker. And in late 2015, there was a police raid to our headquarters looking for me and another director because of some blasphemy and insulting the president charges. It was because of, there were like 41 different counts, but one of them I remember very specifically, which I was found guilty on later on, was that I compared Godzilla and the Green Hulk storybooks with Quran. And yeah, that was considered as a heavy blasphemy charge. So due to all these charges and old cases being reversed and piling up everything, I felt the need to go, and I came to Canada to pursue my PhD and MA and PhD studies in the discipline of global leadership. And right now I am, and then I served, I was honored to serve as the president of Atheist Alliance International 2016-17. And then right now I am a board member of Center for Inquiry Canada, and also a director of Association of Atheism Turkey.
Didn't you expect that to happen? Like, but if a lot of people might, a lot of people have this basic understanding that the reaction you get from starting an atheist organization in an Islamic country is the same. Like you're gonna get beheaded by the government or something like that. But they don't understand, like, it's very different from Islamic country to Islamic country. Right? Like, getting executed for something like that is almost. Almost a guarantee, I guess, in Iran or in Saudi Arabia, in Pakistan and in Bangladesh. I would assume that you need to be more worried about the people rather than the government. In Tunisia, you might be able to get away with it, but you're still going to have a hard time. But in Turkey, what was the situation like that, like in Turkey back then, and what it is like now? Like, would you be able to get away with it if you weren't, like, comparing Islam to Godzilla and stuff like that, starting an atheist organization? Like, did you expect, like, just an atheist organization, would that be able to survive in Turkey? What was your expectations?
In my case, there were 41 different towns, so that was only one of them. And I can say that most of our former directors have been subjected to similar lawsuits and found guilty. None of them served time as of now, but almost all of them have criminal records due to blasphemy now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. What do you think, Selin, about, how much are we allowed to do what we do in Turkey? Because, like, we are an atheist organization. At the same time, we have to abide the law. We have to, work under the blasphemy laws and the different penal codes. So it's very mixed feeling always, walking on thin ice. Yeah, it's, every post, every share, every statement we do, we have to consider, is this going to bring any harm to our directors? Is anybody going to get arrested? Is anybody going to get questioned if a director or two stays a week in jail? Then you won't have any more members and volunteers and that kind of stuff for a long time. And that's going to be literal activist burnout, so yeah.
All right, Sarah?
Yes, technically looking at it, Turkey isn't ruled by religion. Actually, looking at the laws, looking at the constitution, the government...
It is.
The constitution clearly states that Turkey is a secular state. People can have religion, but that doesn't mean that the state has religion, because the state is secular. The state doesn't have a religion of its own on paper. And it's still the same way today, but looking at the way it is enforced, first of all, there's a complete separation of religion and state, technically. And technically, it's also against the law to get religion involved in politics. But they do that. And when it comes to blasphemy, actually, technically, you're just not allowed to insult the religion or the people who believe. But there's a difference between insulting and criticizing. And the problem is that sometimes criticism could be interpreted as if it was an insult. Why? Because Because when you have some people in the country who are very radical about their religion, then they don't want anybody even claiming that it's wrong, you know, that maybe God doesn't exist. So, you know, I think it has a lot to do with ego. So for them, it's disrespectful, you know, it's like even criticizing it, even saying you're wrong. To them, it's like, you know, it's extreme disrespect because they deserve to be, you know, like the kings of the world or something like that. So this is why sometimes they try to do the best they could to punish you after criticism as if it was an insult. You know, it has something to do with showing your power, basically, you know, to show who's the boss. You know, like even criticizing them is like an insult.
So I don't understand how could they, you're saying in their constitution is that there's supposed to be a separation of state and religion, but how could you have blasphemy laws? Wouldn't the blasphemy laws be unconstitutional?
Well, here's the problem. Like how they managed to get away with it. It's just the way they write it. I think they were very smart when they wrote it because they said that you're not, it doesn't say Islam, by the way. It doesn't say that you're not allowed to insult the Quran or the Bible or Muhammad in specific. It says that you're not allowed to insult a religious view that some people in the society may have. And the explanation is that because you can turn people against each other because of that, and then, you know, so this section is actually, I mean, it supposedly they claim that this is against people insulting each other for having different religious views. It's like it's kind of it's like showing it from the opposite. It's like this is how we're trying to protect people from discrimination, from hate speech. So this is like, it's like laughing in our faces in a way. It's like, they keep going like, look, this is against discrimination. I mean, aren't you guys against discrimination? So, you know, here it goes, here you go. But I don't think that there was even one case when, let's say, a Christian guy sued a Muslim guy for insulting Jesus. Or that a
How did that go?
I'm saying it never happened. Let's think in the atheist view, it never happened that an atheist sued somebody who claimed that atheists are, I don't know, like actually, even if it's an actual insult.
I have to stop you there, ma'am. That was until yesterday.
Yes.
That was until yesterday when we sued a pro-Islamic religious newspaper for insulting atheists using the same law. So
wait, yeah, what? Send me information about this. I want to talk about this on the podcast. You got to send me.
Okay.
There's a difference between saying that a lawsuit like that. Never succeeded, and between saying that nobody ever done that. You can guess why nobody ever done that. Nobody ever used this law, despite the fact that that's what it's for, not just for Muslims, also for Christians, for Jews, for atheists, everybody, because it doesn't say Islam. You're just not allowed to insult people's, let's not just say religious beliefs, but also like ideas and opinions about religion, like their religious view, let's say. But no one ever dared suing someone unless it's about insulting Islam. Why? Because people are burnt out. They know the country that they live in, so, and they know that they always use this exact clause in order to punish people who criticize Islam. So until this day, Nobody actually tried to use it for a different purpose that's also purposeful. Because it's about, you know, going like, oh, come on, do you really think it's going to work? Do you really think something's going to happen? You know, like, probably the judge is going to laugh at our faces because it's like, don't you know that they just use it, you know, for people who criticize Islam? But here's the thing, that law, they keep saying that this law exists against discrimination and hate speech. And this is how they keep raising it in front of our faces. And if that's the case, that clause exactly has to protect us too. Mm. So there you go.
I mean, even if the judge laughs it off, it's still very valuable because now everybody can point, if the case, whether it succeeds or it doesn't succeed, it's still a victory either way. Because if it doesn't succeed, you guys now have something to refer to show that this is a one-sided law. But tell us more about this case. Like, yes, so yesterday you guys made history?
So, yeah, 2 days ago, there was an article on Yeni Akit newspaper, which is the most bigot newspaper in Turkish history, I believe. Very pro-Islamic, very pro-Erdogan. Anyhow, they made a piece on atheism and how idiotic atheism is, how stupid morons our atheists are, and they are just lost victims of their stupidity. They just are lost in the ideas of atoms, and the more research, the more research you do.
That's all I think about. How did they know?
No problems with translation. That's you know, even when you read it in Turkish, it sounds really
really.
And then they link being an atheist, that it's a high risk that you can become a serial killer in the future, and you know, not only that, and there were other points of this article too. Oh, and they also say this is why in United States they write "In God We Trust" on all $1 bills, because they try to keep their people non-atheist. So that's why it's a hilarious masterpiece. I love the article. It's a good humor piece, and seriously,
unintentionally.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, it cannot be more stupid. But at the same time, it was a great opportunity for us to use the same blasphemy law, which they, you know, portray as the hate speech law. And then we just kind of reversed it and tried to hack the system by using it against that Islamic newspaper.
But we're not hacking the system.
Nah, not really, because we know that it's not going to go forward. We know that it's going to be a no action.
We're not hacking the system. It's not about a loophole. This section is actually against hate speech. So we will use it against hate speech.
Right,
and maybe
right.
For the first time in years, it's actually going to do some good.
Right. Well, I mean, to be clear, if they weren't using this, I mean, in an ideal world, we would like Muslims to be able to publish you know, their problems with atheism, no matter how ridiculous it is. Like, we are not, like, I'm guessing, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, you guys are not suggesting that Muslims shouldn't be able to do that. You guys are just trying to show the hypocrisy here, right? Like,
they should be able to criticize, they should be able to insult us.
Yes. So, I know. I just wanted to make it clear for the audience.
They should be able to insult us. They should be able to do all that. But if I'm going to prison when I say the same sentence to a Muslim, and then if a Muslim says the same shit to me, then it should happen the, you know, other way around as well. That's what
agreement. Look, it's like we need to have an agreement in these cases. It's not just about the law and all the Muslims against all the atheists. That's not the case. But for example, when I talk to a friend of mine who believes in Islam, I send some ground rules, and I go like, okay, we can send some ground rules, but first of all, they have to be equal. For example, let's say that person is really kind of sensitive. Like he gets offended really quickly. I go like, okay, then I'm gonna be very polite, but it's like there's one condition. You're gonna have to have the same standards when you criticize me, so we can go ahead and be very polite towards each other. But maybe there's another believer who's not so sensitive, and he goes like, you know what? Let's criticize each other like crazy, like no limit. Okay, and I go like, okay, but I'm gonna do the same thing as well. So like, no hard feelings when I do the same. Right. So basically, if in this country they go like, oh, that's an insult to Islam, blah blah blah, then you're not gonna do the same. Like, we will not succumb to being considered inferior just because we have a different opinion.
Yeah, the problem Muslims and Christians have is that if any society wants to introduce the smallest amount of limitation on insult, and if they're consistent with that limitation on all sides, the Quran and the Bible would be banned. Mm-hmm. The Quran and the Bible itself would have to be banned because they are extremely anti-kafir and anti-heretic. So for their sake, they should be pro-secular for if they want their Quran and the Bible. Like, I mean, they wouldn't pass any test that is trying to avoid people being insulted or people being targeted or people being threatened. Any rule like that would necessarily have to ban the Quran and the Bible. I'm not advocating for banning the Bible or the Quran. I'm just saying that's the conclusion from any law like that. So, I mean, we tolerate Muslims and Christians with books that promotes us being tortured for eternity for our opinions. We tolerate them, and they can't seem to tolerate us simply us saying, you know, we think what you believe in is bullshit. They think we're being disrespectful. I mean, it's not even comparable to what they are promoting.
I would never promote the same things that they that they promote against me. I would never ever promote the same things against them.
Right, exactly. Selin, what's your experience been like? How did you live in Turkey for how long?
Since 2009, it's been 11 years.
Right. So, how was your experience with the government?
I don't have any lawsuits, but it's because I've been careful. Basically, I know how to be careful. And I mean, I wouldn't do the same joke Anna did.
She learns from examples in front of her. So yeah.
Right. They say a smart man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from other people. So Celine is very wise.
You? Mm-hmm. So I haven't experienced anything like that, but that doesn't mean that my life is a rose garden in here. It's like in one way, when it comes to defending our rights, I do not go soft ever. First of all, it has nothing to do with Islam. It has nothing to do even whether Islam is right or not. It doesn't matter, actually. It doesn't matter whose opinion is the right and the righteous one. It just that doesn't matter what we think, like what's my opinion, what's your opinion. We have to be equal. Like the minute that you claim that I should kind of apologize for being an atheist, or like apologize in advance before I say something, or that I should somehow accept that like I don't believe in what you believe, but because your lifestyle is actually the righteous one, then I should accept you as a little bit of my superior. That's not happening. When it comes to discrimination, I'm very fierce. I'm angry, and I don't let it pass. I just I go like, no. If you're doing that, that's discrimination. That's a human rights violation. I'm not wrong for being an atheist. You're wrong for discriminating me. And if you do that, then we're going to do something against it. You're not going to get away with it. Like, you shouldn't get away with it. I don't go soft on that.
I mean, after all, in Turkey, we receive lots of... We had to put up with lots of death threats by that was an association of Sharia that was established, you know, right after we found our organization. The counter step was for the Islamic people to establish an organization, an NGO, called Association of Sharia. And on their first ever interview, the president of the organization gives a death threat to the leaders of directors of our organization about, you know, if we continue our events and articles and all that, that, you know, they're not going to hesitate to do what the Quran orders them to do, kind of thing. And they cite the verses and stuff like that. So, and that's on a interview, on with video interview. So, you know, like...
Think about it for a second. If someone says something like that, like, are you going to go like, oh, please don't do it. Please, we'll be good. Like, let's just, you know, meet halfway. Maybe I'll become a little bit less atheist and you become a little less stabby. And, you know, would that be okay? I mean, you can't go soft in this. And here's the thing. When you go soft, they become way too brave, you know, to go like, okay, they're not going to be able to do anything. They're really scared, so I'm going to do it. And you know. So you need to give, you know, like a strong answer so they won't be, you know, so they won't be tempted to try. You have to stand strong.
I'm still laughing over stabby.
Does that scare you sometimes, though, the stabby part?
Yeah, that's why we installed two panic buttons in our headquarters, because we received too much death threats by fax, email, phone, social media. And then we had to install two panic buttons with a private security company, which is hooked up to the nearest police station. And so, you know...
Do you feel like the police is going to be fair to, like, they're going to come running to save atheists?
No, man! Police is saying Allahu Akbar when they are running towards the protesters. That's the police we have. So, you know, it's not going to...
Not all of them, but...
Yeah.
I mean, what happened to the whole secular revolution and all the people that want, you know...
Oh, the secular Turkey, that's history. That was the first republic, I believe, from 1923 to up until some 5 years ago, I believe, or 10 years ago, when the first AKP... Erdogan's, people became president, and then that's like, you know, that was the first time a highly religious imam took office as a president in Turkey. An imam became a president, so, you know,
aren't there still a lot of people out there that would, you know, a lot of activists, a lot of people that want to take Turkey back to a secular...
there are, but, you know, then again, it's not something you can do it by the current voting system, because it has been already documented and even proven that, you know, there have been lots of frauds during the elections. They, you know, rigged it many times. But yet, you know, who you gonna, like, what you gonna do, file a lawsuit? Well, who is the Justice Department? You know, like,
the elections.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to appeals regarding the ballot, the ones who make the decisions are the High Council of Elections, and you can get
what? It there. What personally, why did you decide to get involved with atheist activism in Turkey?
Oh, like me? First of all, okay, like me, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where I am, because I care a lot for human rights, not just atheist rights. I realized that, well, in this country, apparently, you know, some people had a problem with human rights. When I say having a problem, I'm talking about not being very much in favor of it. And that's a problem because human rights, for example, the Declaration of Human Rights, you know, with the voting and everything, you know, and it was accepted in the UN. So all member states have to commit to it. It's not just deciding one day, oh, I want to be a humanist today, and then on another day you go like, oh, now I don't care about that shit anymore. Like you have to be committed to human rights. It's not something each and every country can decide on. It's something very basic. And I guess within the past 10 minutes you realize how angry I get against these things. And I was also an atheist already. It doesn't matter what the country is, which country it is. It's just that Turkey is one of the countries that has a problem in this section, in this department. So we should do something. It doesn't matter like where you were born, where you were raised, how much time you consider to stay in that place. I want to do my best in order to try to make the world a little bit better, like as much as I can as one person. So if I'm in Turkey right now, then, you know, let's concentrate on the local problems of Turkey and try to do something about it.
I think that's perfect transition to
action. There's a bit of an echo. Okay, go on, Susan.
I think that's a really good transition to start asking you guys about the ARAP program.
Wait, no, so, I have one more question before we go there. Oh, boy. One last question. Would you guys, if we go back and given all the, because I don't think a lot of people appreciate, I mean, this interview by itself is not highlighting how much crap you guys had to go through, right? So, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh my God, that was bad, that's sad. But based on my conversations with Onur, I think like if we actually went into the details and how it affected your life and everything, people would realize that this is a nightmare, right? But given everything you went through, if you went back on her, would you still get involved in atheist activism in Turkey and all of that?
I have given a lot, including my freedom, including my home, including being able to see my parents for one last time. So, yeah, I sacrificed a lot, and now I'm a, you know, fugitive of law in Turkey. I cannot even go back, and I'm an asylum seeker. So, the short answer is no. I would not change one day. I have, contributed to atheist activism. In my case, I used to be a political activist until 2013 Gezi protests, Taksim Gezi Park protests, which was the biggest secular protest or the biggest protest period in Turkish history, with 1.5 million people visiting the site only in Istanbul alone. And in the whole country, it was probably around 5 million. So, yeah, it was the biggest protest in the history of Turkey. And it was a secular protest against the pro-Islamic government. During that protest, we lost 8 friends. And I was in the planning and...
Lost as in...
They were killed by police. And I was in the planning part of that and that protests. And after that, it really affected me a lot. And I kind of wanted to get away from political activism. And soon after, I... committed myself to human rights activism, and atheist activism came along.
Okay, so, Susanna? So you wouldn't change a thing then, right? That's
Oh, no. I would. I mean, I don't regret becoming an atheist activist, even though I have given up. I have to give away, you know, lose many things in life, which I think were precious. I still think that, you know, the value in this and the, you know, the feeling it gives you, the satisfaction it gives you to be able to help people, to be able to enlighten others in terms of, you know, in the light of reason and science. I think it's a big thing, and I think, you know, no, I wouldn't change a day.
Celine, do you agree?
I agree, obviously. I don't regret anything, but I'm not sure that me saying that I don't regret anything would even mean much compared to Honor's story, because he really lost a lot. I mean, Turkey was his one and only homeland. He was born in Turkey, raised in Turkey. I'm not just talking about the fact that he had to, you know, apply for asylum. I mean, even if he had like different options in order to move to a different country, it doesn't matter, because that's his one and only homeland. So me having to go to a different country would not be the same, you know. If I've come to a point that everybody hates me in Turkey or something like that, and I go like, okay, I just can't take it anymore, I have to leave, then obviously it would be horrible, because I've lived here for more than 10 years. But for Anna, I can guess that, I mean, he lived in only one place, so he lost the only place that he could ever feel actually home. So again, me saying that I don't regret a thing doesn't mean much.
Right.
But yeah, I don't.
You're in Turkey right now.
Yes.
How do you leave much? Like, do you guys see each other, or like, are you just there? Like, does your activism involve going to Canada, or do you go to Israel at all? Or you have, like, when was the last time you left Turkey?
For activism purposes.
Well, in general, like, I'm just saying, like, for you, if you decide to leave Turkey, you're able to, like, just go. Where is your? Yes. Yeah, go on, sir.
Yes, yes, yes. I have options.
Right.
I have options. I can go to Europe.
She has three passports. Yeah, that's why she's the president.
What?
Yeah, I'm also an EU citizen, you know, a Spanish citizen. So this is what I'm saying. I mean, it's very different. When I say that I don't regret a thing, it's kind of easy for me to say, you know.
You're like you're like a UN in one person. Like,
and these three countries are only the ones that I'm a citizen of.
Right. Okay. Okay. So let's go to ARAP. Is this a new program? Is this an old program? Is this a previous program that was changed? Like, how long have you guys been doing ARAP, and what is it about? Sorry, okay. Susanna, I stole your question. Good.
So I will give the intro, and then Celine, you can take over from where you like. This is a new program, and it's gonna be in the works. It will start probably on July 1st. So we are just counting down. And so after 6 years of experience on field in Turkey, and producing over 200 events, we, came to some findings, and we saw that there are over 5 million refugees in Turkey currently. And 5 million refugees, 95% of them has relocated within the past 7 years. And a significant number of those refugees are political refugees who, you know, had to flee their homelands just because they renounced Islam. And we were, I think, inspired by the Atheist Asylum Project of Atheist Alliance International and the Secular Rescue Program of Center for Inquiry. And we wanted to take a more active role in assisting non-believer asylum seekers currently living in Turkey. And yes, myself being an asylum seeker at the other end of the world, hey, may have had a little to do with motivating me in that direction when I was crafting this program with Selin. So, first I would like to remind you that the Association of Atheism Turkey, Ateizm Derneği, is a small NGO, very small organization with around 250 members. So we don't have, you know, a big budget. We are barely able to keep our doors open with the support of our volunteers and founding members. So, you know, having said that, we wish to, you know, provide a much needed service for non-believers, for the non-believing refugees in Turkey in general. And so the aim of the program is to assist the non-believers in Turkey who are running from persecution to start a new life. And number one problem they have is the language barrier. Now, due to the language barriers, like most refugees and asylum seekers, when they go to a new, you know, place, they need to find a suitable home, roommate, or work. And especially in a Muslim-dominated, Muslim-majority country, a pro-Islamic country, like Turkey, especially for the past two decades, in a Muslim-dominated society, you know, it's really hard to find those due to your disbelief, due to your non-believing state.
Think about it for a second. You ran away from a country because it's a radically religious and the place you went to avoid persecution, maybe even execution because of your disbelief, is again a place that's also kind of going in the same direction. It's not as bad, but it's also kind of, you need to keep your motivation up and you need to be strong about this because it's like you ran away, but the only place you managed to go, you know, for the time being, that's Turkey. So it's like, for those people, it's basically like choosing between bad and worse.
So actually, this is very relevant to my experience because my, experience, a lot of my activism is in Iran, because not because I value it more, but just because I speak Persian. And the refugees that we deal with in Iran, their number one destination, the atheists that are trying to get away from the government there, they end up in Turkey, most of them, right? Yeah. So the difference is, like, Iran is a lot worse for atheists than Turkey, but still, once they land in Turkey, it's not like they are, now it's hunky-dory and it's fine for them to be an anti-Islam activist there.
Let's say it's not like being in Norway or Sweden, you know, it's a bit different.
Or you don't say.
Right.
So anyway, in the case of being a free-thinking, openly secular, non-religious infidel in today's pro-Islamic Turkey, finding a room, roommate, work, is a shared home, house is extremely hard. And even if you find one, once your disbelief, once your atheist state is discovered by your boss or your landlord or your roommate, then you will go back to square one again and start over. So, you know, that's the major problem.
Go into the pooper.
Yeah, yet. There are, like, many like-minded Turkish non-believers. Open-minded secularists, non-religious minorities, atheists, who are willing to help atheist asylum seekers and refugees in terms of accommodation and work. So we recognized that there was a need to build such a network or program to address this issue, and that was, you know, how we move forward. So the plan is, what we are putting in action very soon, is to hire an employee to address certain needs and to provide certain services. Now, first, the employee is going to be either one person who speaks, reads, writes fluently in Arabic, Persian, Turkish, and English, both in writing and speaking. So, you know, if we can find somebody like that, it's a full-time position for 3,500 Turkish liras per month. And that person is going to work at our Istanbul headquarters with the general manager of the organization, who is also another full-time employee. 3,500
in U.S. dollar? U.S. dollars.
Don't ask.
The currency changes by the minute. So, yeah. So, like, I might say something, like, according to what I heard yesterday.
Hold on. I need to use...
On the GoFundMe, it says 3,000 USD. Oh wait, no.
I just want to for people to have an understanding of how much this will cost, you guys.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. 3,500 Turkish liras cost 519 US dollars.
A month.
500 US dollars a month is the salary of that employee in Turkey.
Some people might think that's very low, but that gets you by in Turkey, doesn't it?
Yes, it gets you by. That's, by the way, the minimum wage is 3,000 Turkish liras. So this is like 500 liras above the minimum wage.
Okay, so, but isn't that too low for somebody that speaks four languages and writes in four languages?
Yes. Thank you for helping the cows.
Let me help the cause. Maybe you could pay them more if you had more people that were supporting the cause. So check, link it
now. It's not that we like it very much, you know, but
I hope we can pay double. I hope we can pay double. It's all about how much funding and sponsors we get on board.
Right.
And that's
the minimum. Let's say that's the minimum amount that we could pay to that kind of person, because we cannot possibly pay them the exact minimum wage. So the minimum we could pay that person is something a little bit above it.
After the first 6 months,
you're just trying to be realistic with the resources that you have. You don't have very much resources. And again, link is in the description if you guys want to help the program for them to be able to have more resources. But go on, sir.
After the first 5-6 months, I'm hoping that we will give a chunky raise depending on the, you know, budget we have, donations we have, and everything is very transparent. So far, the sponsors of this program are Center for Inquiry and Atheist Alliance International and Ateism Derneği. And we hope more international or multinational organizations are going to work to join on board. So the employees' responsibilities, we have, by the way, that was the number one option, to have a person who speaks four languages as a full-time employee. If we cannot find somebody with that qualities, as you have pointed out, then what we will do is we will aim for two part-time staff, one fluent in Arabic, English, Turkish, the other fluent in Persian, Turkish, English. This is the plan B, which may be seen as a more realistic approach. But we already have a few applicants who speaks all four languages, but we will see how it plays out. The responsibilities of the employee is that number one is finding accommodation solutions for atheist refugees and asylum seekers in Turkey, like helping applicants to post ads on various local, regional, and nationwide online platforms to help them to apply, correspond, translate, assist, intervene in the process when it's needed. So, and number two is finding jobs for atheist refugees by helping them to translate their CVs and resumes to Turkish, because that's the first thing you need when you come to Turkey. You need your resume in Turkish so you can apply and find a job. So that's another thing. That's a service that needs to be provided. And we will provide templates and assistance to post or apply for ads and set interviews to correspond again. And the third service we are planning to provide is receiving application from atheist asylum seekers in Turkey for legal help. We, in the Association of Atheism, we have a legal team of pro bono lawyers, and some of them are immigration lawyers. So once somebody needs some legal help, a lawyer, we will forward them to the necessary volunteer lawyer, and they will take over the case. So we will also provide legal help. Number four is the service we will provide is receiving applications for issuing letters of reference, letters of verification, or letters of support to the asylum seekers for their existing respective asylum applications. If you're an asylum seeker, you know that those letters of reference, letters of support, letters of verification are crucial in your case. And another thing we can do is we can verify, evaluate the authenticity of the claim, and we can have a secondary verification from the sources in that origin country, and we can verify and confirm it with our existing UN and EU statuses, which may weigh some weight. So number five service, the last service we provide, is assisting applicants regarding their submissions for pocket money, allowance, scholarship applications to Turkish or international agencies, programs, institutions, foundations, secular, humanist, atheist, charities, etc. So we don't provide rent help. We don't provide grocery help. We don't provide cash assistance in that regard. We don't provide direct funding. What we do is we can guide you into which organization you need to submit if you need some scholarship or allowance, pocket money, or that kind of financial help. So even though we are not providing it, we are trying to help you and guide you.
We don't provide it because we simply don't have the money.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
But also, I think it's not the most helpful thing to do. I mean, I think you guys have touched exactly where you could provide the most help. I mean, get the most return on your investment. Like, you're, instead of just giving people money, you're trying to help them to find a more continuous, consistent source of income. And I think, like, that benefits them. Like, if you give somebody $1,000, that's not going to last long. But if you could spend a fraction of that helping them find a job, and you know, that's going to be a lot more helpful to them. And also, this method that you're using really helps avoid people scamming you and taking advantage of your help, because there's a lot of people trying to, like, find these programs and lie about, exaggerate how bad their case is. But, you know, you're basically filtering those kind of people out automatically by not handing out cash to people, right? Like, and I can also tell you that what the services that you're providing is exactly what we've noticed people coming out of Iran and going to Turkey, exactly what is needed the most. Like, you guys are, you probably have access to a lot of good information, given, you know, based on what I've seen, that your the suggestions that you're coming up with, right? Like, the refugees that come up and land in Turkey, like, they don't speak in language, they can't. I mean, the average refugee is having a hard time finding a job, finding ways to take care of themselves. But then the ex-Muslim atheist ones have to deal with a lot more than the average refugee, because now if the person that they're hiring them all of a sudden realizes that they're a goddamn heathen, they are at more risk of, you know, losing their job. So, I mean, one thing else I want to mention about how important your work is that you're doing, a lot of atheists who run away from Iran and land in these countries, they end up pretending that they're Christian, because there's a lot of Christian organizations out there helping refugees, right? And I think this is such a shame to the atheist community that we're not there for each other, that the Christians are there for each other, that you have to pretend that you belong to another community for you, for so that you could get their help. Like, this is not their fault. This is our fault. This is our community not standing up, not defending, not protecting each other. And this is what I say to the people that say, oh, why are we getting together and starting an organization? This is what religions do. To them, I say, like, fuck you. You know, fuck you. This is why atheists are being targeted, attacked, discriminated against, oppressed. Because you allow it. And you are giving the monopoly of community and support and charity to religious organizations, right? So, I mean, this. So thank you guys for doing this. Like,
that's the problem.
I will give a little teaser, by the way. Armin was a guest speaker last September 18th, 2019, at Victoria, BC, at a panel discussion event organized by CFI and AI jointly. The topic was protecting blasphemers. And over there, you also talked a lot about why atheist movement lacks support mechanisms internationally, and the atheists people who try to show themselves as Jewish or Christian or member of any other religion, Muslim, just to be able to get by and to receive such help because there is no other secular alternative. So, we will be publishing that talk probably this week. And, I know it's been long overdue, but here it comes. So that is specifically what you have talked about and among many other topics on that talk. So that's why I wanted to remind it. But going back to your question, yes, my experience with atheist asylum seekers while I was serving, before I was honored to serve as the president of AAI, I worked for a year as the asylum director of Atheist Alliance. And as an asylum director, I have evaluated over dozens of cases. What one of my findings was that, you know, almost half of the applications coming from Middle East is found to be not true, followed further investigation, that's another thing, how people are, how bad, you know, I mean, the distinction, the difference between economic migrants and asylum seekers. Most people don't know these different, and you know, they just want to relocate to have a better economic life. Yes.
But there are different right ways.
Yeah, but you know, when you try to do it as, you know, showing yourself as an atheist activist and as an atheist asylum seeker, and you fabricate evidence, then it becomes highly illegal. No atheist organization or activist can stand behind you. You know,
For a second. I don't really care if it's legal or illegal. You're basically abusing an NGO's good intentions. If people keep faking it, then the money will not go to the people who actually need it.
Let's just be clear, because a lot of people might not understand. If you're a refugee, what you're doing is that you're a refugee and asylum seeker are basically interchangeable, right? So to be a refugee, you have to be somebody that needs to get out of where you are because of direct risks to you, to your life, to your safety, to your freedom. And this is part of human rights agreements that all countries have signed into, that this is that they accept a certain number of refugees. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are economic migrants. Even if they are ex-Muslim atheists, there's no, like, they could be an ex-Muslim atheist in Iran, but they haven't published or said anything. And they're like, oh, I would like to go to somewhere else where I could say openly whatever I want. Or maybe they want to upgrade their lifestyle. But even if it's not because of their lifestyle, they just want to be in a free country, there is no direct immediate risk to their lives. And by applying for asylum, by trying to become a refugee, they're taking the spot of another person that is at risk, that is an immediate risk, that needs a lot of help. And again, when we, just as Selin said, we're not saying that do not be an economic migrant, but do not. What we're saying is that do not use the asylum-seeking resources out there for the refugees. Do not use that as a method. There are other things for you to be a legal migrant to another country. I don't know, maybe student visas, work visas, other methods. But do not use the methods that are there and the resources that are there for people who are at risk, because you are actively putting people in harm's way if you use those tools.
I also want
to...
What?
The logic is very simple. It's okay to want to do this thing we call a brain drain. That's fine. No problems with that. But thinking about it for a second, an economical refugee, what happens if that person stays for like one more year in his current country? What happens? Basically nothing. But if that person, the one who's facing persecution, maybe even execution because of him being an atheist, he needs to get out right now. If he stays for 6 months more, maybe it'll be too late.
I will also give a little bit feedback on the, what I have discussed with many pro bono international immigration lawyers is that there is also another thing that we need to recognize. Every time somebody applies for political asylum and that immigration division finds that case fake, every time they do that, let's say there are, in 2020, there are 45 applications from X country. And out of those 45, there is 20, 25 fake ones or, you know, the ones that have been refused. Well, once they realize that, they raise the bar for that country in terms of the required letters of verification, letters of support, letters of confirmation, evidences, solid evidences, and all these stuff. They keep raising the bar. So every, you know, fake atheist asylum claimer makes it very hard for the next guy who has a real need. Right. So that's
how do you guys detect legal points. How do you guys, when you guys going through the applications, how do you guys decide? I don't know if you can tell us. Actually, if you can't tell us, don't tell us. But is there a way to tell us that? How do you recognize who's a real refugee and who's not?
Most of the time,
but maybe
I will just tell what is publicly available on our website and GoFundMe page, which is 100% true. We always go for confirmation from a secondary source in the origin country. So if we don't have anybody in that country available, it's very hard. It will most likely won't get approved by us. But we have somebody almost in everywhere who can just, you know, tell us if it's authentic or not, and he can bring it to a lawyer. A lawyer in a few days will tell you if it's authentic or not. They have some verification methods, but we always try to go with confirmation from secondary sources on the field.
By the way, I know Susanna has questions, and I can see she's highlighting one in the Google Doc, but I'm just not letting her speak for some reason. Sorry, Susanna. Okay, Ceylon, you wanted to say something? I interrupted you, sorry.
No, I just added the...
Okay. Okay, Susanna.
Can I talk now?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I told her to lead this conversation, and I didn't let her speak at all. Go on.
You took all my questions. So I wanted to ask you guys how our community can best support your work.
Yeah. Our community, meaning Atheist Republic?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Well, we are aware that Atheist Republic is also in the works with AAI and other organizations about coming up with a blasphemy protection program, you know, protecting blasphemers. And we know that you have some project in the works, and we would be more than happy to integrate what we have built so far. And we will be more than happy to work together as much as we can. And the first thing we want to establish is to get the leading organizations on board and to create a shared database about the asylum, atheist asylum seekers or non-believer asylum seekers, so that every organization doesn't have to go through the same verification and confirmation steps, because it takes lots of resources and time and effort. Most of the time, you know, halfway through, it's unsuccessful, and, you know, it just extends into years and it just disappears. So, yeah, to make everything faster and to make everything more effective, we would like to establish a network, not only amongst the people in Turkey who can accommodate and give work to atheist refugees and asylum seekers, but also in terms of the international atheist humanist organizations who would like to support this initiative and would like to become a party of the shared database of these people, so we can help them as best as we can. To help us, you can, I believe, in the in this video description, you can see the GoFundMe page and the official page of our organization. And you can also support us on social media, and you can support us by funding. There is no such thing as a small donation.
Right. Can I make a suggestion on how we can potentially help? And you could tell me if this is good or not. This is a suggestion I made to AAI as well. But I think one thing we can do is we could be kind of like your unofficial media directors. The way that would work is that if you go... as you continue, you're going to have people that you hire, people that you volunteer for you, refugees that you end up helping. What we can do is we could keep conducting interviews like this with the people that you're working and the people that you're helping, the ones that it's safe for them to come and do an interview, right? And they could come and they could tell us their experiences they had going through their personal story, going through their fears, through their struggles, through their hopes, and, you know, share their stories with our audience. And because people like, you know, people would enjoy hearing their stories, right? This is something that people would be interested in. But while they do that, they could also mention the experience that they had, how you guys helped them, how they came in contact with you, if it's safe to say. And every one of these interviews could be an excuse for us to also introduce the program to our audience and get people to maybe support it as well, right?
So yeah, the only problem is that the process in Turkey unfortunately takes up to 7-8 years. And during the process, most of the time, they don't want to, come out and because...
We could do it without mentioning their name or without
camera. We will find a way.
And also maybe the volunteer.
Selene, you were muted.
Yeah.
Well,
the
interview is not going to be in Turkish. It's going to be...
We have, I mean, he is the translator we need, right? So Armin himself.
No. I'm just saying. I mean, maybe they wouldn't be too afraid because, right now they're in Turkey, but you know, it's not a Turkish podcast or a Turkish YouTube channel, and it's not going to be in Turkish.
I also know that I think Armin also does podcasts in Persian too.
Yeah, we have YouTube. That's very popular, actually. The reason why it's popular is because YouTube hasn't introduced any sensitive keywords against Persian words. So it's not getting hurt by, like, our English channel, even though it has a lot of more subscribers, it doesn't get as much views as our smaller Persian channel. Because there's no suppressing of it because it's political and because we're speaking Persian. So it's actually surprisingly have a lot of views for a small channel. So it's good. So, yeah, but yeah, we have a lot of, we are actually making, people are noticing us in the atheist community in Iran. Like we're making a lot of, we're now a big deal.
By the way, I also would like to remind everybody that I am also a proud admin of the Atheist Republic Victoria BC Consulate. So yeah, that's also still.
Can you also be an admin of our Turkish page? Maybe get that active at some point.
We can do that.
I didn't even know there is one.
I'll send you guys the information.
They have Izmir, Ankara, Istanbul, and Adana consulates on web. I mean on Facebook.
Okay, it's Republic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we make most of our advertisement on those groups as well. So, you know, we are already there.
A consulate, you know, an Atheist Republic consulate. I love
that. Yeah.
Yes, it goes with our, calling them consulates goes with our branding of being an Atheist Republic. Which is funny because there was a guy in Malaysia and he was very upset that we had one of the many Muslims that were upset with the fact that we had a consulate in Kuala Lumpur was like, this is like a consulate in the Republic. This is because they're using these names. This is treason. This is another nation. These people should be executed for treason. And then it's funny because our members in Kuala Lumpur were making fun of this guy. They say like, okay, you have to go after Banana Republic as well because they are using the same terminology.
You know what? I think it's a shame that Ankara, Istanbul, and Izmir, they all have a consulate. Ankara, for example, it's the capital city of Turkey. It should have an embassy, not a consulate.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
You guys, not following the terms.
So. No, he's gonna. Point. Now he's gonna start calling the pages as embassies.
Yeah.
You need to take some research about it, you need to be precise. The one in the capital city is an embassy.
Let me tell you actually something. In the capital, you have an embassy and a consulate next to each other. So you can still have a consulate, right? So we think like we still need consulates in every city, which is city specific. When we will have embassies, the embassies will be country focused, right? So we still need consulates even in capital cities.
Yeah, but you do need, you know, the thing that's embassies. Missing. You do need an embassy.
We do need embassies, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, this is fun. Thank you, guys. This was very educational and interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you for the description. Go. I mean, even if you can't afford helping financially, go follow the pages. Follow them on Twitter. Share their content, share it maybe with people that can help them financially. Again, you know, we atheists keep on claiming that, oh, you don't need religion to be moral. Atheists are as moral as religious people. You can't just say that, okay? You have to actually follow it up by doing stuff to prove that claim.
No, try getting in their shoes when you think about those people. I mean, I live in a country that I wouldn't get executed for being an atheist, you know, and I wouldn't go to jail just simply for saying they don't believe in God. So I'm more comfortable right now. But try getting in those people's shoes, especially people who live in more secular countries, like some EU countries, some North American countries. That person could have also born in a different country, like in Iran or something like that. So those people are trying to get their freedom back, and that's very difficult. And if we don't help them, they may have to unfortunately give up on that dream, and we don't want this to happen.
Right.
And what you said about being good without God is that, you know, or having, you know, morals and stuff, like to help that in Turkey, what we did was, as the Turkish NGO, we have distributed soup to the homeless every Wednesday night for 3 years straight at the city center of Istanbul, Taksim Square. For 3 years, every Wednesday, we gave soup to homeless, and we just wanted to show people that you can be good without God.
That's awesome.
When you eventually have a Persian-speaking volunteer or staff, both either volunteer or staff, you know, or both, can you get them to, if they're a good speaker, can you get them to come to our Persian speak, because a lot of there's a shit ton of Persians that are in Turkey right now, and a lot more that are trying to get to Turkey from Iran, and they constantly contact Atheist Republic like, hey, I need help, what do I do? And there are actually some people even contacting us and saying that, hey, we want to help, what do we do, right? So if these people could maybe get introduced to your program in Persian, because a lot of them don't speak English, if I could interview somebody in Persian for that audience, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I will try to get somebody, probably the person who we will hire as the case manager of ARAP program will be able to speak, but as soon as we have a Persian speaker, I think we can go ahead with that show as well.
I'm hoping to get a lot of, maybe I'm not promising anything, but I'm hoping to be able, maybe to, in the show like that, to even ask if people are willing to volunteer to help your staff. And I'm hoping that a lot of people will be lining up. Maybe a lot of Persian people in Turkey that would be listening to us might be interested in just helping without pain some way.
Yeah, we are opening our arms to the volunteers, because, you know, like 95% of our organization, except we only have a general manager full time. Other than that, you know, everybody is volunteer. All of our directors, volunteers, that's all on a volunteer basis. To become a volunteer of our organization, we have some threshold. So our threshold is that you will need to commit 30 minutes of your time every week in order to become a volunteer of Association of Atheism Turkey. And if you like to be a director of the organization, our threshold is you will need to commit 30 minutes every day to the organization. You will need to contribute 30 days of your time and effort every day to the organization. So yeah, the volunteer is 30 minutes per week and director is 30 minutes per day. So that's the that's the caste system we have.
you couldn't find any other name for that, could you?
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us. Super informative. I'd like to encourage our audience one more time. Please go check out the GoFundMe. They're doing really amazing work. I threw you guys some money, so I'm hoping that this can really lift off the ground.
So nice.
And
thank you.
We're excited to help you guys move forward with this. So
thank you very much for your contribution, and thank you very much for your help. And we love Atheist Republic, and we are looking forward to be back here on different topics, and we are looking forward to collaborate more. And let's try to make the best out of, what we can.
Awesome.
Because no one should be left behind.
That's right.
Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect way to end it. All right, I'm going to stop recording.